This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM and FM HD1.
Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch. And that tells us that it is 6 p.m. Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community radio station, KPFT 90.1 FM here in Houston, or kpft.org HD1 on the internet. I am Mary Edgerton, tonight's host, and along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on journeys through the windows of their souls, on fanciful trips amid worlds of enchantment, through stories of their childhood and their families, before returning us safely to the present. And this is May. What a beautiful month and so many things to tell stories about. For one, this month we have just completed another fun drive for KPFT. Even though the drive has officially ended, you can still go to the KPFT.org website and select the donate button. And don't forget, please, to choose So What's Your Story as the show you want to highlight in your donation. Well, there's more to May. There's Mother's Day, which was May 14th. Very important also, this is National Mental Health Awareness Month and also Borderline Personality Disorder Awareness Month. Let us not forget that 2 in 5 adults report anxiety and depression, and 2 in 5 teens describe experiencing persistent sadness or hopelessness, exacerbated by social media, bullying, and gun violence. Take a moment to ponder and make sure that you know your resources. In 2020, the 10-digit number for the suicide hotline was retired and became just 988, an easy-to-remember 3-digit number for 24/7 crisis care. It is also linked to the Veterans Crisis Line, 988. Now, our show tonight is going to touch on all those themes. Well, wait a minute. The donations part I'm going to leave to you, the listeners. Go to kpft.org and press donate. But our storytellers are going to talk about things that do touch on all those themes. And hey, help us keep our stories on the air. So for all these things that we celebrate in May, I have brought you two wonderful storytellers, Tina Moore and Michael Horn. Tina Moore is from Georgia. Interestingly, she was a participant in our Grand Slam here in Houston in January. This in itself is a story. How does someone from Georgia end up winning the Story Slam in Houston? Tina has a lot of wonderful stories, but let's start with Tina's story that she told us at the Grand Slam. It's very moving. Tina, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Thank you so much, Mary. Oh, wow. Well, it started where I was a sensitive kid and my mom didn't really know what to do with me. And she said, I knew you needed help, but I didn't know what to do. And so when I had my own children, my daughter was a very sensitive kid. And I thought, okay, I'm going to find her some help. And so it started this, you know, journey of getting her the care that she needed. And it was also really tough on being a mom because as much as you try and as hard as you try, you're doing your best and it's not good enough. You know, you can love them and love them and it just isn't enough. And so we got through elementary school and hit the ground running in middle school, and then things kind of fell out of the bottom. And I found a class, and I had to drive an hour each way. And it was for families that had someone in their life that was suffering with a mental illness. And so, one of the first things that they told us was put on your oxygen mask first, because if you go down, your family's going to go down and there's going to be nobody to help. So that was the first thing, was self-care. And then the second thing was, you're going to have to accept the situation as it is, and you're going to go through some grief before you get to change, because people, you feel it like, this is not what I signed up for. I didn't think that at 13, I would be, visiting her in a program, and, away from the first time from home. I thought it was going to be college or so forth. So the self-care really hit me. And I thought, I have to do something, because I feel like I'm going down, with the ship here. And so I did something drastic. I got a job from outside of the home for the first time in like 15 years. But I didn't get just any job. I got the perfect job. So I could work when I wanted to. They fed me. It was amazing. And the best part was, my first day, I opened they opened the door, and I'm greeted by this young man, and he's like, okay, here is a paper bag, and I need you to put your phone in it, and you'll get it back at the end of the day. And I said, okay, excuse me? You mean I have to give you my phone and no one's going to be able to get a hold of me? My family can't get a hold of me. Like, if there's a crisis, like my husband can't find the mayonnaise, or my kids missed the bus and, I got to come, they want to be picked up. And he's like, no, ma'am, this is protocol. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. It was like the universe was sending me a gift. Like, she's tired. Yay, I could do this. And that was my first job on a movie set. And that's what I was. I was an extra in the movies, and it was just so perfect. So at this point, things are still at home. You've got, you've got good days and bad days. And sometimes you kind of wait, you're walking on eggshells a little bit. But what was noticeable was things weren't getting better. And she needed some care. It was like we were putting a Band-Aid on it, So she needed some care, and she was in a residential program. And there was a day where, I was on set, and we usually would go visit her on Sundays, and we'd play Uno in this little room with no windows. And that's how I learned how to play Uno, and it just killed me. When I would drive home, and I thought, oh my God, is she going to be okay? So I was on set about 2 miles from where she was. It was a Wednesday, and I got special permission to go see her. And so I was leaving set, and I thought, oh, what can I bring her? I want to do something. It's like 8:30 at night. I had to be there by 9. And I thought, donuts. That's what I'll do. I'll get donuts. So I'm driving, and I have the radio on, and the song comes on, and it's Fix You by Coldplay, which it's a somber song. And it just hit me in my soul. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly what I want to do, is I want to fix her so there's not this suffering. And then it just came over me, and it was like, boom. Grief, it showed up. It was like grief just hit me, and I am in the drive-through of the Krispy Kreme. And I get up to get my order, and I could like barely, squeak out, could I have a half a dozen glaze, please? And so I'm driving then to go visit her, and I'm trying to pull it together, because you don't want your kids to see you fall apart. You don't want to see you crying. So I'm like, it's going to be okay. And I get there, and she's waiting for me in the room. And I open the door, and she says, sees the bag, and she says, oh, Mom, you brought donuts. I was like, yeah, honey. And we didn't play Uno, but we had the best visit. And at that point, I just thought to myself, you know, I think she's getting the help that she needs. And everything is going to be okay. So I got it. My mom didn't know how to help me, but it was so amazing and such a beautiful thing that she got the help that she needed. So yeah, this illness, blessing in disguise, because it changed me as a person, and it changed her, you know, just different life trajectory. Yeah.
I love that story. I know we've spoken about this. I think that mental health is just so poorly understood in this country. And, you know, I came from a generation, oh, if you go see a therapist, that means I was a bad mom, you know, coming from my mother's
right.
home. You know, how can you do this to me? And yet, I mean, I think mental health professionals are great, you know, that it is a great thing to have when you have someone who's not well, not happy, not able to live their lives, and they need help in getting their emotions rewired or medical help, you know, whatever it is. I strongly support it. And I think your story is really beautiful. And it is true. You know, you have children and
there's no handbook for this. Yeah. You know, that book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. I'm like, okay, really? I missed that chapter.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
where is it? But, you know, you do the best that you can. And I think of my parents. I was the youngest of seven. So the time I came around, you know, they were in their 40s. And, you know, you hear about validating a person's feelings, like you understand, you know, like, you know, you're sick. Oh, I'm so sorry that you feel sick. Tell me what's going on. Where, you know, my mom was a nurse for 55 years and she took care of sick people all day. And so if I had that same like mom, it was like, okay, listen, you are not bleeding out your eyeballs and you don't have a broken arm. Go to school. You know, that's it. And so, you know, you don't grow up with it. I mean, again, she did the best she could. Of course, I love my mom, but you don't grow up with this, with these skills that sometimes sensitive kids, they need it. I heard the best analogy about sensitivity. So, you know, an orchid is a beautiful flower and it needs special light. And when you feed it, the temperature's got to be the right temperature. It's got to be warm. It has to have the right conditions to thrive, right? Then you have a dandelion. You can put that dandelion in any environment and they just go with it and they flower and they multiply. And so sometimes I heard of it in the school, like you may have a classroom of mostly dandelions and then you have a couple of orchids and they need different teaching than the dandelions. And it's so hard. I mean, I feel for teachers and of course parents, but the thing is there are things you can do. And the first thing is to pause and look at your own emotions and your own reactions and think, okay, what can I do differently that I won't make things worse. And this is what that class, it really helped with. And I was with other parents too, that we all felt like we were on an island, like no one gets us, you know, because you get all of the, you get people at the judgments of, well, you should just do this. Yeah. You should just do that and everything will be fine. Oh, you're being too lenient, you know? And it's like, you know, half of them don't even have kids.
Right, right.
Like, come on.
I get those tough love. You got to use tough love. And I'm like, you know what? You use what's appropriate to the child that you have.
Right.
And
right.
If, when my children come and tell me, and I raised two stepsons and then my two daughters, you know, you blah, blah, blah with them differently. And it's like, you know, you were two different people. Of course I interacted with you differently. Of course I, you know, gave you different things. And I think that they don't really realize until they have children that
Yes.
it's you know, you look at this beautiful, precious face after you deliver it, and then you bring it home, and then there's like the kids with colic and the kids who don't thrive, and the kids who, and it's not all your fault.
Right.
But like you say, there are sources that can help. You can reach
right.
out. Perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
Reach out for help.
Absolutely. It's so funny what you were saying about, parenting differently and kids have different needs. And unless you become a parent yourself, it's like, that's when you really get it. So when my daughter turned 13 and everything kind of hit the fan, I sent my mom a beautiful bouquet of flowers and she called me and she said, honey, you sent me flowers, but is this for? And all the card said was, Mom, I get it now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And I love you. And maybe in one time in life, she would have said, I hope you have a child just like you. Maybe she did. I don't know. And it was that humbling experience of, oh my God, I get it. She really did the best that she could, you know, and we could all try harder. And I think that's what parents do. I do. I think they do the best that they can. And love isn't enough sometimes. You have to learn the skills, and it helps you, and you can model it, for them.
Are you able to call out a couple of organizations that you think have been particularly helpful that anybody listening to this call might be able to
find? Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. NAMI is one, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and there's kind of chapters all over the country, and they have support groups. They have something called NAMI Basics, which you can do online. It's like 6 weeks, it's self-paced, and it teaches you all about the mental illness, or mental illnesses, several different ones. And that's the part that's important. It's the psychoeducation. And oddly enough, I work for an organization that I took the class with. The class is Family Connections, and it's a long name, but I'm going to go for it. It's the National Education Alliance for Borderline Personality Disorder, which a personality disorder, borderline, it's a horrible name. And it was created in the 1930s because the doctors couldn't diagnose. It's like, is it neurosis? Is it psychosis? So they said, no, it's on the borderline. And really what this illness is, it's an inability to regulate your emotions. And it's, it's about relationships. Nine of the criteria, they have to have nine, there's nine criteria. You have to check five boxes to have an official diagnosis. But there are some people that are that high sensitivity, high reactivity, and it takes them a long time, to kind of come down to baseline. And they don't necessarily have to have all of, all five. There can be a couple. Mm-hmm. That is really, really impacting our life. So yes, so it's NEABPD, and that organization, like I said, I actually work for them now. Their Family Connections program, it's free and it's education. You learn all about BPD. One of the fascinating things is there's 256 different combinations. This illness is the hardest to diagnose mentally and physically. And it looks like a lot of different things. It could be bipolar, ADHD, anxiety, depression. And, the psychoeducation, they teach you skills that are based on dialectical behavior therapy. And the support, it's the support. You're in a class with other people. Like I said, that we're all on the island. And it's just something so comforting. There's no judgment. So those are just think of it. NAMI is a place to start, and specialization if it is someone in your life that struggles with big emotions or kids self-harm or suicidality.
This has been a very moving description of being a child, honoring your mother when you understand what it's like to be a mother, and being a mother in a situation that wasn't quite what you expected. Not to mention highlighting the importance of mental health wellness in this country. More to come on that, but now let's pause for station identification. We are a community-based storytelling radio show broadcast on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio, also broadcast at 91.9 in Huntsville, 89.5 in Galveston, and anywhere on the internet as kpft.org HD1. Our show, So What's Your Story, is broadcast every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central Time. But as you will hear, you can listen to the show after it has been aired. Yes, just visit our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, at www.houstonstorytellers.org, where you can replay any of our previous shows from So What's Your Story by selecting the radio show tab. Want to become a storyteller? Ha! Yes, you do! Join the Houston Storytellers Guild and attend their monthly story swap on the fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out their calendar tab and grab the Zoom information for the next virtual swap. The May Story Swap just took place, so check out their June calendar. You can also find other exciting events on the calendar, such as the next meeting of the San Antonio Storyteller Association. It is currently a hybrid event with both in-person and Zoom attendance. Another way to get into storytelling is by joining the Texas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. You can find them at https://texasstorytelling.com. That's TEJASSTORYTELLING.com. You can find in-person and Zoom or hybrid events around the state on their calendar. Our friends at the Moth are back at Warehouse Live and obviously in person. The Story Slam in June will be held June 20th, so take note of that. It's not the usual second Tuesday of the month. Check out themoth.org storytelling events and their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston, for updates on the next event and to buy tickets. And with that, folks, I want to take us back to Storyland. We have more to hear from Tina Moore about her experience in storytelling in Houston. I am fascinated by the fact that you live in Georgia and you won the Story Slam in Houston and came back. And I need to hear that story.
Oh my gosh. So that
in Houston, and what was the story?
Oh yeah. So the whole thing I'm talking about this class is that's how I actually discovered the Moth. Is driving home on a Saturday afternoon, trying to find something to watch or hear on the radio other than college football, which is huge in Georgia. And I stumbled upon the Moth and it was amazing. You know, I had just spent 2 hours with people in a room with heart stories of a heartbreak and what we were going through. And the Moth, there was such a variety, you know, and I laughed and connected and just, it was wonderful. So I had no idea that they do these live storytelling events, and I heard it on the radio and I thought, I'm going to go online and see if they do these in Atlanta. So when I looked, they had one in Houston, and as luck would have it, I took that self-care thing seriously and I had booked a trip to Galveston by myself, the first time in my entire life to take a vacation by myself. To recharge. And I remember somebody telling, you know, saying, oh my gosh, you're not going with your husband. It's like, there's the judgment. And they're saying, are you getting a divorce? I'm like, no, I'm going so I don't get a divorce. I need that time. So anyway, so the theme was control. And I was like, okay, what? I don't know. I've never done this before, you know? So I worked on a story and I walked to the beach and I just tried to talk myself out of it. And Tuesday night came along at Brand Live, I believe. And
Warehouse Live.
That's it. Warehouse Live. And I was, again, driving in the rain to Houston. If I had died, no one would have known. I told nobody, nobody. So I get there and I put my name in the hat. I am sitting by myself and I'm so nervous. They pull out my name and I start with my story. And it started with, the night my son, we always connect over the movies, and I'd asked him if he wanted to go to the movies, and he said no. I'm gonna go hang out with my friends. And it was like, oh my God, the wind was knocked right out of me because he was ready to start high school. I was like, what? I am gonna lose this connection. It's important. And so I thought, all right, I gotta do something different. I want to get control of the situation. So I joined his fantasy football league. And I had no clue about football. I'm from Wisconsin and it doesn't matter. I had nothing, no clue about football. But I'm competitive. And I'm like, okay, it's like me and these nine little high school crowd. I'm gonna do this. So I get home from work and it's the draft and I have my strategy ready and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna pick my teams based on last names. So, he's like, okay, mom, you need a quarterback. And I'm like, okay, I want Tom Brady, Brady Bunch, my favorite show growing up. Boom. So I pick the team and they're doing really good. Like they are performing for me. And my son and I are now having like good conversations versus, how was school today? And he's like, oh, it's fine. We're talking about, defense. Did you see Miami? Defense. And he's like, God, it was killing me, So I thought, all right, this is good. I'm just going to take it another step forward. And I'm going to take him to go see his first NFL football game. So he is a huge Seattle Seahawks fan. And it was over, I think, Columbus Day weekend. And they were going to play the Rams in in Los Angeles. So we booked it. We get there. We land. This is our both first time in California, like Hollywood. So we're trying to do all the tourist stuff. And here was our plan. We're going to go back to the hotel room. And the next morning, I was going to drive us to the stadium. And then I go down for a cup of coffee at, 7:30 in the morning. I'm in the elevator and here's this lady. And she's like completely decked out in Seahawks. She's got tattoos. She's got a jersey. Her shoes are like Converse and they're completely, blinged out with Go Hawks. And so we get in this conversation. And the next thing you know, I am up the floor, I turn on the light. My son's still sleeping. He's like, "Come on, mom!" And I said, "Listen, we are going to a tailgate party with Richard Sherman's parents. You got 30 minutes to get dressed. We're going downstairs, and we're sharing an we're sharing a lift, and you're going." And he's like, And I'm thinking, I have no freaking clue who Richard Sherman is, and I didn't. And I'm like, but we're sharing a lift and you're going. So we get to the stadium and our new friend, Allison, there we are. Apparently Richard Sherman was a big deal. And so we're hanging out with his parents. And then we got into the stadium early and she gave him a poster and she said, okay, listen, this is where you stand and you get autographs. And my son's a little shy, kind of socially awkward. And he was just screaming at the top of his lungs. He was yelling at the players. And nine players signed the jersey. And then the coach, Peach Carroll, who's a gum chewing, maniac, and I'd asked him about it, he gave the kid a piece of gum. And I was crying. I mean, I was so excited. So we're watching the game and we're getting into it. And I start to panic a little bit, like, okay, they gotta win. Like, I know I can't control this. But this would really suck. We're having a great time. And my kid says, oh, yeah, mom, it was a wonderful trip. Too bad the Seahawks didn't win. So there's like 7 minutes or 7 seconds left in the game. And Seattle, the I'm sorry, the Rams are in a position to score. And Seattle is up 16-10. And quarterback has it. He throws it, I think his name was Cup, to the receiver. And he misses it. And he's like, everybody is going absolutely crazy because Seattle won. And I'm high-fiving people. And me and my son were we're hugging. We're so excited. And then he reaches over again and gives me this really big hug. And he says, I love you, mom. This was the best trip ever. On my 16th birthday, I want to go to Seattle and see a home game. And I said, okay. And I said, do you want to go with your dad this time or maybe your friends? And he said, no, I want to go with you. And it was like, just like that, he knocked the wind right out of me. And that was my story. I think back how terrified I was, but it was so, It was so genuine because that experience with him, it was amazing, and I don't think I could reenact that. Again, I've been on the MOS stage probably 7 or 8 times around the country because that's on my bucket list. I love it. Of where else I can go, and there hasn't been any events, several stories, but there was nothing like that first one.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes.
And I have to say, it shows how much you love your children that you've reached out to both of them to connect with them in the way that they need to be connected with, you know, that you're recognizing them as independent people and making a connection with this one and then this one based on their personality, their
right
more than personality, their person.
Their interests. You know, there's like sometimes you'll have a situation where your kids are just kind of backed up, and it makes sense because we want to raise them to be, you know, young, responsible people. And I always say, okay, listen, you can do whatever it is that you want if you can, you know, support yourself and make the world a better place than when you found it, you know? And so, you know, there's kind of this foot in the door, you know, if you want to talk to them and connect with them, this foot in the door is find something that they're interested and be curious and get, you know, and just embrace it, like jump in the pool. And this is totally what this was with football. I said, I had no idea. I just loved it that there was a bunch of kids in the neighborhood that were on our fantasy football team. And I, you know, I was doing well and I was just talking trash when we're driving up to the bus stop and I could see them like, hey, Cam, I just lost last week, you know? And I remember my son telling me too, you know, he was in high school and somebody asked him like, you know, hey, who's winning your football league? And he's like, my mom. He's like, oh, you're kidding. He's like, no, mama. So anyway.
Well,
yeah.
That's great. So when
lots
is
of fun. Lots of fun.
He hasn't turned 16 yet, right? When is he going to turn 16?
No, actually, so this was in 2017, and I took him to the game when he was 14. So he like jumped ahead because he's like, we're not going to do this next year too. And so now he is actually 19, and he's in college, about an hour from home. And his new thing now is thrifting. He's got a little thrift store. Mm-hmm. And actually right before this, I was at Goodwill texting him things, because I'm his buyer and I love it. So now I'm like, I know what to look for, the tag, and I don't understand it. I do and I don't, but I understand like kids right now, vintage is hot. Like they want things.
Yeah.
You know, from years ago, and now I wish I would have saved some t-shirts.
Yes.
But yeah, it's kind of neat. So that's what he's into now.
Wonderful. And thank you for sharing both of these stories of your children and obviously your love for them and they're making it in this world. It's happening. That's wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much. It can be a challenge. It can. And you just like, it is what it is for today. And sometimes it's really good. And sometimes you're like, okay, let's try again tomorrow.
Oh, I have an expression when things,
I
say freeze frame, you know, just freeze frame, stop here. Let's just live in the moment right now for as long as it lasts.
I love it. Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Oh, that's freeze frame. I'm gonna steal that, Mary. I love that.
Be my guest because that's what it's about when you're raising children is just like freeze frame, stop.
Yeah.
And remember these frames, like keep them in your mind so you can replay them when you're not in a freeze frame moment.
Oh, exactly. I have my kids, my favorite picture of my kids. They were 2 and 4 on my credit card. And sometimes when they call me or they want me to pay for stuff and I remember, I'm just, okay. I'm like, oh, okay. You were so cute when you were so little. I love you. I need a visual reminder. When you're frustrated or whatever, it's like, okay, yeah, you were, yeah. It's, you know, it's good to look back like they were little kids once too. And sometimes the world is not a kind place, but I tell you, it's home where you want to make it as kind and loving as possible.
It's home, and sometimes it's not easy to make it your home. And that's the journey we go through with it.
Yeah.
Well, thank
you. Oh, thank you, Mary. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for doing this show with me. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
Thanks again to Tina Moore for sharing these very personal stories of being a child and then being the mother to two very different children. Thank you, Tina, so much for sharing your journeys with us and also for teaching us through your stories about mental health awareness from a mother's point of view. It is quite different from the mother's viewpoint than it is from the patient's viewpoint. We are coming to the last show of the hour. This one will be a little different. Put yourself now in the mindset of the child with all the anxieties of childhood. You're no longer the mother wanting everything to be perfect and working as hard as you can to take care of it when it's not perfect. Now you're the child just trying to cope. And for any new mothers and parents in general, oh, there is a message here. So listen closely. I am here with Michael Horn. I know Mr. Horn well, and in fact, I know him as Mr. Horn, because he was my daughter's history teacher at the Duchenne School here in Houston. And of course, I will always know him as Mr. Horn. We shared the stage at the Moth Grand Slam this past January with stories of blessings in disguise. He has a great story to tell. Mr. Horn, welcome back to So What's Your Story?
So thank you for having me. My story is about a blessing in disguise that, from my childhood. And I'll tell you it. As a child, I was a notorious crybaby. My father was a construction engineer and we lived all over the world. And I cried in schools from Paris to Nova Scotia, to São Paulo, to New Jersey. And then in third grade, we moved to Houston. And my first day at school, I rode the school bus, and I did not cry on the school bus because my big brother was with me. But as soon as we got to school, he went off his way. And then here I was in the sea of children. And I didn't know where I was supposed to go, so I just started bawling. And this woman came and got me and found out where I belonged and took me straightway to my classroom. I was still blubbering and my nose was running with snot and I was a mess. And as I'm introduced to my class, there's a kid in the back, a big kid in the back, and he's looking at me and he pulls out his notebook and he writes my name down. And he will be my bully for the next 5 years. So you can imagine, I did not like school, but I couldn't pretend to be sick because our new doctor, Dr. Bing on Hempstead Highway, ended every visit with an injection. And I was the worst about injections. I would scream and cry and it would take two nurses to hold me down. He would have to come in and give me the injection. I was not his favorite patient. Well, I had decided that perhaps stomach aches would keep me under the radar for Dr. Bing's office. Well, turns out if you complain enough times, you will end up at the doctor's. So here I am at the doctor's. Now, in my memory, Dr. Bing was this giant man. He wore a white lab coat all the way down to the ground, and he smoked cigarettes. This is the 1970s. So he's sitting there looking at me. And in his head, I imagine him thinking, as he's smoking a cigarette, he's smoking, he takes a puff. He says to himself, there ain't nothing wrong with this little shit. But he says to my mother, y'all gonna have to take him to Herman Hospital and get him the upper and lower GI. Now, those of you who are not wincing inwardly right now, and you don't know about the upper and lower GI, they take tubes and pipes and every orifice, you get enemas and catheters and barium milkshakes. Oh, it's terrible. And I spent 2 days in the hospital, and the 1970s was a time where parents did not stay with you at the hospital. So I got taken to the hospital, and I guess because I was a crybaby, it made sense for them to never tell me what was about to happen to me. So it was a complete surprise. And the worst surprise was when the nurse one day casually comes into the room and she pulls the curtain around my bed and she grabs my penis and she starts shoving this pipe into my penis. And I'm screaming, what are you doing? What are you doing? And she says, we have to get a urine sample. And I said, I'll go pee-pee. And she said, no, thank you. We prefer to do it this way. Well, of course, all the tests came back negative. There was nothing wrong with me. But something happened. This visit changed me. And I'm not sure what it was that changed me. My mother was very a great mother. She never complained when I was crying, and she never punished me for crying. She never took away the thing that made me cry. And I remember her praying with me during this time. But something happens when I get out of the hospital and I go back to school. I'm not afraid of my bully anymore. I don't cry at school. I get an injection a couple of months later without even a frown. I go to summer camp in sixth grade. And then in eighth grade, I signed up for, and I shocked everyone by signing up and going to a six-week mission trip in the Amazon jungle. Well, that freshman year, my father moved us to Indonesia, and I had great fun biking through Jakarta by myself. I was not afraid of anything. Now, I have six grandchildren, and I try my hardest not to dispense parental wisdom or how to raise your kids. But let me leave you with one piece of advice. If your child cries, do not give them the upper and the lower GI. That's just not right. I'll leave you though with one last quotation from the famous child psychologist, Cormac McCarthy, who says, suffering is part of the human condition and must be borne, but misery is a choice.
Well, it's nice to know you were cured of your stomach aches.
You know, again, I wouldn't suggest it as a method.
Definitely. I can't even begin to imagine with my children.
Well, so I was telling my sister this story, and she said, oh, Mike, she said, do you know my Dr. Bing story? I said, no, what happened? She goes, well, when she was in kindergarten, this is probably not that about the same time as mine, she said, I pretended to have a sore throat. And she said, we went to Dr. Bing, and Dr. Bing said I had to have my tonsils taken out. And she said, I guess she said, I was afraid to say anything else. So she said, I went and had my tonsils taken out.
And never complained about a sore throat again.
No.
That's an incredible story. Also, the cigarette smoking. So I found, stashed away in our house, because I'm descended from
hoarders. And so there's like five generations of hoarding that we had to go through when we were cleaning up the homestead. My grandmother had saved all these Life magazines from the 40s and 50s. And on the back is an ad for Camel cigarettes that says more doctors smoke Camel than any other cigarette. And it has all these pictures of doctors smoking. And me as a pathologist, I was really taken by the fact, since most people don't know what pathologists do and don't even recognize them as doctors, there's actually the pathologist with his microscope and his book and his slide and a cigarette in his hand. I thought, well, they remembered us. And all the other doctors were doing things like doing surgery, and then you have them back in the office smoking their cigarette. We got to smoke on the job.
Well, I'll have to say, so I just came at the tail end of professional smoking, right? That was something people did. When I had my brain surgery, my surgeon smoked. I didn't know this, but someone said that when he came in to talk to them, they could smell the cigarette on him. I'm thinking, if you're a surgeon, I guess maybe we let you smoke. I don't know.
Calmed your nerves? I don't know. I'm not saying anything. As a pathologist who sees it all after the fact.
Oh, gosh, yeah, it's terrible.
Well, thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you.
Well, that was a really great story about a child and what they went through, and a little advice for the parents about what not to put your children through. But rounding out Mother's Day, I want to include a story from a previous show that was told by Kelly Kells about his mother, because it really is a beautiful story honoring her. And Mother's Day is a part of May. So here is Kelly Kells.
So my mom, she was born in the year 1953. So to give you a little context, in 1953, the very next year, 1954, it was the very popular Supreme Court case, Brown versus the Board of Education. And so that's before that, schools were segregated. And after that, schools were integrated. And so you might think, okay, well, your mother, she grew up in a time where schools were integrated. And so lucky for her. But I don't know if people really understand, you know, just because it changes, that it's not all of a sudden perfect, that, you know, there was a lot of people hostile to these changes at this time. It wasn't easy. There's a lot of people hostile to a lot of changes now. So you can imagine, even so back then. And so you have to imagine the first decade of integration, and then the second decade, and the third decade, and you realize that we are still dealing with the impact of the impact of segregation being for so long. Just in another episode of my mom's life during this time, I remember a story being told to me, and I was probably in my 20s at this time. So this wasn't, I think a lot of these stories were kept from me as a kid. I was protected. But I remember hearing a story. We all hear about black restrooms and white restrooms. And, you know, yes, this was outlawed at some point, but it's not like everybody went and took the signs down right away. And so I don't know exactly what year it was, but my family, my mom and her siblings and her parents, they went on a road trip into the South, and they actually were faced, multiple occasions, faced with segregated restrooms. And so my mom, the story goes that my mom went into the black restroom like she was supposed to, and she immediately came out of there and she said that it was a fool. It was absolutely disgusting, filthy, and that she could not use this. It was actually very common for my grandparents. I don't know if it was just them or other people to actually bring your own cleaning supplies. But in this particular story, there was no amount of cleaning that could be done. And I know some people might hear this story and think, the black bathroom, you know, black people are dirty. There's a lot of people, none of y'all I know, that think this. But the reality is no, one of these two bathrooms is being serviced regularly and one isn't. So in this particular story, my mom leaves this bathroom, couldn't do it, and she actually goes into the other bathroom that was nice and clean. And I don't know if, you know, I don't know if anybody saw her. That's kind of where the story ends. I forgot. I don't know what the follow-up was. I don't think anybody saw her or if she got in trouble. You know, But this was her Rosa Parks moment. So I'm hearing the story and I'm charged. And I'm like, wow. And I'm actually shocked that, to me, my mom had to deal with this. My mom, who is alive and well today, had to deal with this. Like, I thought this was, I felt like from reading in history that this was, I felt like I was made to believe that this was so far in the past. I didn't think that this was something that my mom dealt with. And I, like I said, I was probably in my 20s when I'm putting a lot of this together. And just giving it, getting that context. I didn't like hearing that my mom had to, you know, deal with this kind of situation on a semi, you know, regular basis. Up north, it wasn't so much. But, you know, like I said, when they would go down south, it was really bad. But this was her, like I said, her Rosa Parks era, her rebel rouser phase. Like you said, that, you know, well-behaved women never make history. So, I'm like proud of, like, that's my mom who did that. And
that is a Rosa Parks moment. It really is.
She also, I remember stories of her telling me I believe it was the Vietnam War that they were protesting and there was a walkout. She was in high school. I think when I first heard, I might have thought she was older, but, you know, a lot of times they think that the kids are pushed by their parents. Even now when you hear these things, that the kids are pushed by their parents to do these things. But the kids come together and they know what's right and they know what they want to stand for. And so to hear her say that, and she said that they walked out of school and that it did make an impact. And she said she was there, she had her afro, and she said they sat out on the school lawn. And she also brought up the image of Angela Davis, which was kind of her inspiration behind her afro. And just putting all of this context together, like I said, I sometimes wish I had this context even growing up or even when I learned about history. So despite growing up in this, like, figuratively kind of could be at sometimes a dirty era and literally dirty, my mom, despite all odds, she went on to finish school. To go to college. A lot of people, including people in her family, loved ones, encouraged her, you know, discouraged her from doing that. You know, not, you know, out of, you know, doing the best that they could. I don't see it as a bad thing. I think that they thought they were protecting her, wanting her to go the janitor route. That was a common thing. And I think that they were giving the best. That was based on their resources. That's what they felt. They also felt like maybe they were protecting her. But she went on, finished college, and she became a nurse, you know, so she went in this period, this crazy period of time, and as I say, it became a scientist. She's not going to say that. She's only going to say that she's a Christian, all these other identities. She's not going to. But I'm so proud of hearing that and being, you know, that being in my family. And this is why I say she's historical to me.
Thank you to my audience for indulging me in adding that clip of Kelly Kells talking about his mother. Wow, what a set of stories. Thank you again to Tina Moore and Michael Horn. We have traversed motherhood, being mothered, a little feedback to mothers, and so important to us all, mental health wellness awareness. Wonderful stories from you both. Thank you. Please remember 988, the very simple number to call if you are having a mental health crisis. That's all it is, 988. And please keep supporting mental health awareness. I might just mention here again that we would be delighted if you give us a little support also. Please go to kpft.org and click on the donate button. As you step through the donation forms, choose So What's Your Story as the show that you want to highlight. Help keep us on the air and our station on the air. We will be back next week with more tellers and new journeys. But don't leave. Don't turn that dial. Stay tuned into KPFT because next up is Living Art with Michael Woodson and Michael Carson, a community art program that hosts artists from around Houston, including poets, writers, performance artists, visual artists, car artists, and we know that's a great specialty of Houston, and others engaging in educating, promoting, and advancing art and artists in our Gulf Coast region. Hey, just chill. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 HD1, a part of every day, and while you're driving home or just hanging, join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story? It's a great way to make the commute go by. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't end the way you want, remember, it's the journey and not the destination. You can pivot and just put yourself into a new position because it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. Stuck in river. And the tears come streaming down your face. When you lose something you can't replace. When you love someone but it goes to waste. Could it be true? Try, you'll never know just what you